Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. Or you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and welcome to Bookworm. The life of a poet is like anyone's life. A poet usually has a day job, has to support a family, and find the time for poetry when he or she is not teaching or working at another less congenial job. Every once in a while, though, a prize comes along, and the poet is free to be devoted to his or her first love, poetry. Today, we'll be talking to two guests about one prize, the Kingsley Tufts Award, which is given to a poet at mid-career. It's one of the largest awards in American literature, an award of $100,000. We'll be talking to this year's winner, D.A. Powell, Doug Powell, then to one of the judges, Linda Gregerson, who won the prize herself in 2003 for her book Waterborne. D.A. Powell's Tufts Award-winning book is Chronic, published by Grey Wolf. His first three books form a trilogy, Tea, Lunch, and Cocktails, which deals in part with gay life, gay sensibility, and the AIDS epidemic. I thought I'd begin by asking D.A. Powell to read his poem, Sprig of Lilac.
Okay. Sprig of Lilac. In a week, you could watch me crumble to smut. Spent hues, spent perfumes, dust upon the lapel where a moment I rested. Yes, the moths have visited and deposited their velvet egg mass. The gnats were here. They smelled the wilt and blight. They salivated. In the folds of my garments, you could practically taste the rot. Look at the pluck you've made of my heart. It broke open in your hands. Oddments of ravished leaves, blossom blast and die back, petals drooping. We kissed briefly in the deathless spring. The koi pond hummed with flies. Unbutton me now from your grasp. No, hold tighter. Let me disappear into your nostrils, into your skin, a powdery smudge against your rough cheek.
D.A. Powell, Doug Powell, reading from his most recent book, Chronic. Now, the poems in this book are, it seems to me, an enormous departure from the previous poems. For one thing, often they're longer. But they're much sadder, too.
Oh.
And I wondered if you would talk about that.
Well, I hope they're not entirely sad. I felt that the poems were very celebratory, but I do think that now, looking at them, they do have a kind of wistful quality. I'm writing about very serious issues, and I suppose that seriousness, that gravitas has I think looking back over the arc of these four books, there was a kind of brashness, a sassiness to Tea, and Lunch maybe got a little bit more serious, and Cocktails has a lot of humor to it, but the humor is very dark humor. Maybe this book doesn't have as much humor, but it's my reflection upon this time in human history when we are faced with so many decisions about how to steward the planet and how to tend to the business of living with what I see as our collective chronic illnesses, in addition to whatever illnesses we have as individuals. We also have the moral and scientific responsibility of how to steer our collective fates in a new direction. And also I was using love as a list, as one of many chronic illnesses that mm-hmm. we all face in life. And I thought that that was a joke.
Well, sometimes it's a joke.
Sometimes it's a joke.
Sometimes it's a bit worse.
Well, sometimes it's a joke that you laugh at. And sometimes it's a joke that makes you go, oh.
Yeah, wince. The poems of this sort have been referred to as ecopoiesis, poems about the ecology of the earth. And to that kind of thinking, you join the thinking of what you call chronic disease, sometimes called incurable disease. And, you know, it's very nice that they've allowed us to start to call them incurable diseases rather than fatal diseases. But does the earth have an incurable disease?
Well, I think that it's, you know, it's constantly in flux. The earth itself will survive, but how we take responsibility and care for the species within the earth and their fate is really a question of, you know, what direction we're going to allow ourselves to move in as a society. I think that we all know what decisions need to be made. We're not necessarily capable of making them or capable of sticking with them.
Some of your writing in Chronic is about learning how to develop the tolerance to take the drugs that they give you for your disease. Are we facing a time where our cures are worsening the environmental disease?
We are allowing profit to drive innovation. And in the case of medical illness, the drug companies are the prime innovators. They're the prime researchers. And they don't have a vested interest in putting themselves out of business by finding long-term cures. So instead, they develop better drugs. And so we're always feeding into that profit model. And it may be true that the same is also the case when it comes to industry and how it positions itself in environmentally. I think that a lot of the environmental innovations that come along are short-term rather than long-term, and they are designed more to capitalize upon our love of waste and disposability rather than really making commitments to changing that paradigm and making us more environmentally friendly species.
Yeah. But can you tell me about the importance to you of extreme emotion in the poetry? It seems something that you're genuinely committed to.
What can I say about that extremity? I fight so hard to keep control of my emotions in life, or not to control them, but to experience them in a way which feels genuine and allows for the great panoply of human experience. I feel like so often writers, we want to sort of sidestep the difficulties, to not face them. And I think that the challenge is to be able to step into the language of emotion and to utilize it in a way which is also artful, which also is transformative.
I'm talking with D.A. Powell. He is the winner of the Kingsley Tufts Award. And I thought it would be very interesting on Bookworm to talk about literary awards. I discovered that many people are unaware that if a poet isn't teaching and isn't funded by a grant or an award, that usually it's a very hand-to-mouth life. It's not an easy life to live. So I thought I'd talk separately with my next guest, Linda Gregerson. She's one of the judges of the Kingsley Tufts Award. She won the award herself in 2003 for her book, Waterborne. Linda, tell me, how many judges, first of all, are there?
There actually are eight involved.
Eight.
There's a preliminary committee of three and a final committee of five judges. And there are two prizes at stake. This wonderful woman, Kate Tufts, endowed the prizes and lodged them at Claremont University, who the university administers these prizes. The Kingsley is, as you said, a mid-career award. There's also a first book prize we give annually, the Kate, which is named for Kate Tufts, who was Kingsley's wife. And so there are several hundred submissions, and the preliminary committee reads furiously and deeply and loyally, all full. They meet in December, and they pass on to the final committee short lists of approximately maybe 25 to 30 books in each category. We then meet at the end of January or February.
Now, what's interesting to me is that suddenly, in the last several years, the Kingsley Tufts Award has become a really exciting award.
I think so too.
Yeah, both with the award to D.A. Powell and last year to Matea Harvey. The poets are wilder. Has that been a specific desire?
Well, these happen to have been the 2 years I've been chairing the committee, so I'm delighted to hear your praise. the Kingsley Tufts has always, you know, the committee does rotate. And we try very hard to represent the members of the jury, our poets themselves. That's very important and distinguishes this prize from some others. And we try very hard to make sure there's authentic aesthetic diversity represented on the panel of judges, but that we take it, certainly Mike, all I can talk about are the conversations we've had in the past 2 years, and it is very important to us that the full range, the immensely exciting and robust range of American poetry be represented.
It's wonderful because, you know, you hear Kingsley Tufts Award and you think, well, you know, here are some muckamucks. But in fact, as I understand it, they were not wealthy people.
Not at all.
They loved poetry. Kingsley was an accountant. They decided they wanted to leave money behind that would help poets deal with life issues, real life issues, and whoever died expected the other, Kate and Kingsley, to fund an award. And to do this, Kate Tufts sold her house.
Absolutely.
And left all the money, moved herself into an apartment so that she could fund poetry. Many people have been turning up to do this. The Lilly Prize,
yes.
The extraordinary prize that got made to Poetry Magazine. But it really is the case. This is an art form almost entirely supported by the people who love it and the people who write it.
Exactly.
We're all responsible for it.
Exactly.
You know?
Poetry is you know, it's a labor of love, and its publication in this country is a labor of love. Their presses do not make money publishing poetry, and insofar as trade presses publish it at all, the editors basically they make some other contribution that earns money, and then they're allowed somehow pro bono to have this pet child. But it is only sustained by those who love it and their allegiances. And so poets make a living as best they can. Many now have lodgings in colleges and universities, but by no means all. And, of course, the huge difficulty is always to find time to write, and that's what money is good for. We very much hope it will buy time for active writers.
Linda, let's unbutton. I know plenty of poets, so do you. I can't get them all to agree about anything, for the most part. Certainly not anything about poetry. How do you get is it a unanimous? How do you do it?
They're two completely separate processes. The judges on the preliminary committee, and may I mention their names?
Sure.
Because they're really, really wonderful. Derek Burleson has served on that committee for 8 years. He chaired this year. Nadine Meyer and Suji Kwok Kim served on it and will be serving again next year. They're all wonderful poets themselves, and they write very differently from one another. And they're strong intellects and strong readers, and they have passionate relationship to poetry. Now, their job is to, in fact, forward a diverse, robust list that includes surprises. So, for example, part of their process, there's one wishes to come to consensus about a lot of things, and there are always books that command broad adoration and admiration, and they don't have to narrow it down to one, so they're not in a position to make it exclusionary. But their process includes basically a wild card, book, so that in the hopes that there will also – there's something that – because they're passing them on to another jury, they don't have to convince. So there'll be at least three books there that nobody had to convince anybody of, so that they can come from the furthest reaches of individual passion. And then our committee has – we read deeply. We communicate in advance. We do preliminary shortlists. And then we engage in a day-long conversation. We come and meet in Claremont. And the best of these – I've served on other juries too, and sometimes it's the best and sometimes it's not. But the best process – and I've seen it on the Pulitzer Committee. I've seen it on some others. I've not seen it on some others – is are those conversations where you may or may not come to consensus early, but where people are encouraged to argue strongly, passionately – not against, but for books they care about, and where people get their minds changed.
Now, let's face it, Linda, just between the two of us, D.A. Powell's poetry can fry your socks. It's so forward and at the same time formal. It does usually three or four things at once.
It's gorgeous.
Stunning. It is gorgeous. But I would think, well, for instance, those things that, announce that a poet has made his way into a public, the appearance, say, in the New Yorker, haven't come to D.A. Powell. Was there – I mean, and this is very strongly gay poetry. Not just
yes,
gay poetry, but gay poetry that's passionate, gay poetry that's dealing directly with the sexuality
with
of gay men.
With physical love.
Yes.
Absolutely. And with the mortal body.
Yeah. A mortal body, exactly. So in that room – when you got together for a day, I mean, are poets liberals?
There was not one of us who did not, does not adore this book. Period.
That's wonderful. I've been speaking with Linda Gregerson, the chairperson of the committee judging the Kingsley Tufts Award. She's a former winner for her book, Waterborne. You're listening to Bookworm, and I'm Michael Silverblatt. We come from the studios of KCRW, and we'll be back after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm. Today, we're focusing on literary awards and how important they are to poets struggling to grow, survive, and keep writing poetry. Now, I want to bring back D.A. Powell, the winner of this year's Kingsley Tufts Award for his book of poems, Chronic, and with him, Linda Gregerson, a current judge and former award winner. Now, I wanted to ask the two of you, both Linda Gregerson and, very shortly, D.A. Powell, will have received, out of the blue, and for having done nothing other than their work, a check for $100,000. Linda, how did you use that?
Oh, it was, I mean, it was a godsend. It was amazing. Well, I was led foolishly to imagine I'd have a little bit of money ahead. I knew I'd get hit for taxes, but something I've always, always wanted to do in my life was to make a down payment on a flat in London. And what I wound up making was a down payment on a down payment on a flat in London, to which I'm hanging on by my fingernails. Of course, now I'm completely enslaved to it, but it's wonderful. It constitutes a promise that my husband and I made to ourselves that we'd go there every year. So that's what I did.
And tell me, Doug, what are you going to do, or what do you hope to do?
Well, I've thought a lot about it, and I think that as Linda suggests, what we can't buy for ourselves, what we can only buy through the largesse of others, is time. So I'm going to take some time off from my work, from teaching, to devote to writing. And for part of that time, I think I'll probably absent myself from San Francisco so that I don't. I had a sabbatical a couple of years ago, and I sort of frittered away a large chunk of the time doing service and, you know, taking care of things. And this time, I'm really going to just isolate myself and write for a while.
Tell me, is there a downside? Because, you know, people always complain about that, about big prizes, that it ups the ante. And in a certain sense, if you had received this award after your third book, Cocktails, you know, and then provided Chronic. But Chronic is so much an end-of-life book, or is thinking in the terms that a poet thinks of when, as you say in the epigraph, when it's time to sing but you've forgotten your songs and the party is over. Or a different kind of party has to be found. So does this feel like a goad or an encouragement? What's the response?
Well, I'm already working on a new manuscript. I'm about halfway through. I do feel like I've still got something left in me. And the award felt mostly like a nod, you know, like somebody was saying to me at the moment where I probably needed it most, hey, we're paying attention. We're reading you. You're getting a little pat on the back for the work you've done. And that was incredible because I thought, you know, by the time the award was decided, the book had been out for a year. And it really felt like, oh, I put all of that time and energy into writing this book, and it got some reviews, some good reviews, some bad reviews, and now it's sort of disappeared. And so this gave it a second life, and I'm very glad for that. And also, it gave me a second life, a chance to say, all right, you know, you're a poet. Somebody else thinks so. That's usually what makes us a poet.
You know, if anyone wants to look at books of poetry and ask, how does a poet develop, go from the first two books by my guest D.A. Powell to the third one, Cocktails, and then go to the fourth one where the lines are still longer. In fact, there's even a fold-out. It's very witty. The fold-out page on one side is a poem called Cinerama, a wide screen, and on the other side called Centerfold. But the diction is graver still, from the poems about gospel in Cocktails. You've acquired what seems like an extended vocabulary, a poetic vocabulary, to march beside the camp vocabulary or the...
And the pop culture stuff has actually sort of waned a little bit. because I did feel like I was writing about some very serious issues of what it means to be, you know, a citizen of the United States at a time when, you know, during the writing of this book, we were cutting our ties with the rest of the world and moving forward in some very politically dangerous ways, as well as environmentally irresponsible. And so that sense of urgency, I think, really drove the writing of this book.
Well, not only that, but, you know, I don't know. I haven't read it before, and certainly not in modern poetry. The first two books, it's confessions of a wildlife, are not unprecedented. But this, which is Know Me Before I Die, or Parts of Me Are Already Dead, is an extraordinary thing, you know, to do. You know, and you go out and read, what has revelation, self-revelation, done to you as a poet?
As a human being, I know every day I feel like I'm living my life as if it's a new thing. But, you know, when I sit down to write a poem, I always feel like part of what arrests me, part of what keeps me from being incredibly prolific, is that sense that, you know, I'm always trying to re-enter poetry as if it's a new thing. And it's a terrible challenge sometimes to re-enter poetry as if it's new when one's life is not new, you know?
Yeah.
So I've been trying more and more to write in the realm of my imagination. What's interesting to me is that people have found the book to be extremely personal. And I think, well, in order to imagine something fully, it has to be personal. But it's a sort of strange hybrid of my own emotional state and what I give over to the language and let it dictate.
I've been talking with D.A. Powell, the winner of this year's Kingsley Tufts Award, and Linda Gregerson, one of the judges for that award. D.A. Powell's most recent book of poems, Chronic, is published by Grey Wolf Press. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you.
You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm. You can podcast this program, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button on our media player at kcrw.com. My co-producer is Melinda Siegel. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm. Plus copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.